Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the West Covina Unified School District Board of Education regular meeting. This is August 9th, 2011. It is 6:15. I will call this meeting to order. Is there anybody here that requests to speak on anything in closed session? In closed session this evening, we have an expulsion of students, readmittance of three students, and conference with our labor negotiators regarding the Teachers Association of West Covina. Is there anybody wishes to speak to the board at this time? Seeing none, we will then adjourn to closed session. All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This again is the August 9th, 2011 meeting of the Board of Education, West Covina Unified School District. We've returned from closed session at 7:02, and we will go into open session. First, start with an invocation. Is there anybody in the public who would like to offer an invocation? Seeing none, Mr. Spence, please.
Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can gather here as the West Covina Unified School District Board of Trustees and as the concerned community and staffs. We're grateful, Father, for the many blessings we have and the opportunities that will be before us as school starts. And we ask a blessing on those events and the beginning of school as our staffs and our students come back, and ask a blessing on them. We also ask a blessing on our on members of our board and members of our board's family that are in need of the gift of healing, that it will be granted. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the salute to our flag. Ready? Again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please. Here.
Here. Here.
Here.
In closed session this evening, we have two items to report out. Following action was taken in closed session on August 9th, 2011. It was moved by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cami Polis, and approved to expel the following student from schools in the district. Student number 189284 for Education Code 48900. Caused or attempted to cause physical injury, and the vote was 5-0. The pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in the rehabilitation plans. However, enforcement of expulsion of this expulsion is suspended. All right. Okay. All right. Also, in closed session, the following action was taken, with subsequent action being reported in closed session in open session as required by law. Moved by Cami Polis and seconded by Lynn Miranda Jimenez, that the following students have completed their terms and conditions of expulsion have been approved by the Board of Education for readmission to West Covina Unified School District. Student number 181814 left the expulsion and returned to West Covina High School. And the vote on that was 5-0. Student number 191365 to lift the expulsion and enroll at West Covina High School, and that also was 5-0. Student number 181831 lift the expulsion and enroll at West Covina High School, and that also was 5-0. There are no other items to report out from closed session. I have nothing to report. Anybody else board to report?
Sorry.
No others? That takes us to item number 7, items from the floor. I have no request to speak from the public. Anybody in the audience would like to speak to any item on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll go to the business session, item number 8, organization, the approval and consent, approval of agenda and consent items. Item number 4, the appointment of student board members. While they will be appointed, I'd like to recognize Megan Manahan and Jennifer Liu. Okay. As the alternative, as student board representatives from West Covina High School, and I'd ask that that item be put on consent because neither of the young ladies were able to attend this evening's meeting. Anybody else have any requests for items on consent? With that, is there a motion?
I'll move as amended.
Thank you. Second?
Oh, I'm sorry. I needed to remove 14.
I'll second it.
Yes, to remove which number?
14.
All right. And, okay, so on the original motion to approve? Okay. And we'll move that. So it's been moved by Cami Polis, seconded by Lynn Miranda Jimenez, to add on to consent item number 4 and remove consent item number 14. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion, opposed? Motion passes 5-0. That then takes us to item number 5, board policy revisions, first reading.
Yeah, all of these are under Ms. Bastin's area, so I think I will turn it over to Don to address these.
So we're going to be asked to, Mr. Cox can ask a question. We're going to be asked to approve the revision that was at our table, though, on 43131.1. Is that right?
I'm sorry. What was your question?
Well, this was at our table, 43131.1. So that replaces what was in our packet.
Yes,
correct?
Sir.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it wouldn't be as first reading with those
That's
changes,
amended.
Right? Is that okay?
Yeah, it would be as amended.
43131.1, mm-hmm. And then add as amended to that item?
Yes, sir.
Well, there's a different version here in front of us. So, yeah.
I don't know that it's as amended, but... Okay. Let's go through them one at a time then. On food services, board policy and administrative regulation number 3550, food service and child nutrition program. Would you give us a brief description or brief background on that? Beef. I got food. I guess I must be a little hungry.
A major change is on page 5A, where we're required to provide free drinking water during meals. We are installing filtered water in all the lunch areas and providing cups so that would be an alternative, as well as communicating that to the students and when they go through the line. So this is the major difference in this particular policy.
We're not providing bottled water, are we?
No.
To
it's
kids,
filtered
just to
water,
board members.
Like sparkler, normal tap water that's going through a filtration system so that they'll have that
okay.
water.
Board questions on this item?
Well, what's the status then of like the drinking fountains that are already on location, though, too?
Those drinking fountains are available there.
Mm-hmm. And so we're adding drinking fountains? Is that what it is? Or
it's sort of like a sparklets without the bottle. So you're taking direct line water without installing like a drinking fountain, more of a sparklets dispenser
mm-hmm.
with paper cups.
Yeah. So our drinking fountains, though, that we had on place didn't meet the requirement? Is that what it was? Or
well, they're there, but we wanted to enhance that. So when they're sitting down and eating, that they would have water with them. With a drinking fountain, you've got to get up.
Okay, so the cup aspect was
yeah.
the different part.
So it's not required to do that. We thought it would be better and more encouraging students to drink the water.
Okay. Eileen.
I had a question on page 5D, same item, 2D.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading here that the students could purchase the electrolyte replacement beverage. My understanding that there was legislation being considered, and I'm not sure if it passed, I thought it did, where you can only have that electrolyte in conjunction with an athletic sport. So are we selling it?
We're not actually providing it at this time. This would be under the rules and limitations. So this limits electrolytes to not more than 42 grams of added sweetener. So if we were to do that, this would be the limitation.
Okay, so we're not. Good. Thank you.
On the same page, it says that the only food items that could be sold, and one of the things that can be sold is drinking water. So are we still going to be selling bottled water?
We can sell bottled water.
And is that why that's there? Because it says the district is to provide free drinking water
mm-hmm.
during meals.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says that the only things that can be sold.
Right. So there we still have the option of selling that. It is in the vending machines, but during
okay.
mealtime,
okay.
we have to provide the free water.
Right.
So it won't be bottled water again. It's filtered tap water.
With cups.
Yep.
And then the other question I had was on 5C, number 2. I just think it's I believe it's a typo.
5C?
It's 5C, number 2, the very bottom of the page. Mm-hmm. I know there's two twos there. It says, any individual item sold to students during morning or afternoon break shall meet the standards in items number 1A through C above. And that doesn't make sense.
Right. I think it's 1 through A. But we'll, I can go back.
If it's 1A through C, because there's a right above that, or 1 through C.
Right. You're correct.
Could
right above
C.
That it says 1, and then it's A, B, and C.
So it should be C, right?
I believe so.
And those are the only things that I had. And I'm personally grateful that we're giving something besides the drinking fountains, because it was very difficult when children were thirsty and there was a line to try to get through there. And then when we had the flu, we had to offer the bottled water, because we were afraid, you know, with the children drinking. So this is a great alternative.
Okay, thank you.
Cost effective. Thank you.
Mr. Cox, I had two things.
Go ahead.
One, I guess, is, you know, what if we worked out what the cost of the new national school lunch program would end up costing, vis-a-vis the increase in the reimbursement they're receiving from, if that's been worked out yet or we don't know. And the second thing was, you know, Ms. Bowles brings up a good point about the drinking fountains, but I don't know why we can't provide cups by those, too, at least during lunch hours, you know, so they're not limited to wherever the, you know, the Arrowhead or whatever the other system is. There's no reason. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to run through in my head logistics of some of them, but I don't see why we can't provide cups that could also be used from the drinking fountains, too.
You know, part of it's supervision. So when they come through the line, they're encouraged to have water. The cups will be provided there, just like if you put other food mm-hmm. on their tray, as opposed to it's kind of, you know, free.
Oh, so it's not going to be free. It's not going. It's going to be free, but they're not going to be
just out there to go get it. So when they go through the line, also there's water. We'll handle the cups, so it's not the cups aren't misused or wasted. So there's some type of control, especially at the elementary school level. You know, drinking fountains, the facility itself is about $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And ours are older, and it keeps problems with the quantity of water and the quality of water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that, you know, in the long term, I'd rather not have the drinking fountains necessarily in those areas unless they're used, you know, for other meeting purposes to just have. Because, again, it, keeping them clean with coals, you're touching it, retouching it, as opposed to your cup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the cost thing?
Excuse me?
Costs.
The cost for the cups is very...
No, the cost for complying with all of it, vis-a-vis the reimbursement increase that we've done.
Yeah, the cost is minimal because it's, again, we're not purchasing the water. It's more the dispensers and the cups.
Yeah, on everything, though, like all the different requirements.
Yeah, there's no real change in what we're currently doing other than providing the water.
Well, there is difference on how we handle it and... you know, that are in here. There's other changes as well. And so, I mean, I guess that's my question on all the national standards, not just the water.
You're talking about the monitoring, where people have to go in and monitor that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. All those things. Are those things we're not doing now that are an increased cost, or are those things that we're already doing so there is an increased cost?
Right.
And have we ran numbers on some of that with the increase in the reimbursement rate?
I understand.
So it's not just limited to, like, the water issue. It's all of it.
The wording has been updated in here, but we're in compliance with everything already, so there's no incremental increase in cost for what we're doing.
Okay.
The only change really is supplying this water in the cups, which we haven't done in the past.
Okay.
You want to see that cost?
No, that's fine. That's fine if that's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Not on that one.
Okay. I'll just go back on 5C since we're looking at... and I'm not we're looking at typographical errors, I'm not a cook, but I don't, on item number 2 at the top, it says not be deep fried or par fried. I don't know what par fried is. Is that pan fried?
Yes, pan fried. Sorry.
All right, next item is then board policy number 3553, free and reduced meal program. Anybody? Mr. Spence?
Hi, that one. If I talked to Mr. Valentine earlier about the fraud component of it,
mm-hmm.
right? and was wondering, again, I guess we were trying to, I was asking exactly what that percentage is and how that audit's actually done, because we do have to do I forgot the percentage that we do have to quote-unquote audit, but I guess it's not really an audit anymore, right? We just mail a form home, is that it?
Well, we still have to verify enrollment, that it's you actually are eligible for that. Right now it's 3% of the overall population of the applications. And the way that 3% selected, first they did take all applications that they call are error-prone. And error-prone is defined as an application within $100 per month of the applicable chart. So if you're supposed for your family of three, you're eligible if you earn $2,008 or less. If you wrote down that your income was within $100 of that amount, then you would be selected for the verification process. And once we pull all those verifications based on this error-prone, and we still haven't met the 3%, then we randomly sample the other applications, mm-hmm. and a first letter goes out requesting verification on your particular case. So usually it's on income and family size, because the other categories are already pre-verified before they go through the process. And then you get the first letter requesting that documentation. If you don't submit that by the prescribed time, a second letter goes out requesting the information and informing you that you'll lose your eligibility if we don't receive the information within 10 days, because there's a timeline. The verifications have to be completed by November 15th and start October 1st. And then if you don't respond, you'll get a letter saying that you've lost your eligibility. You're eligible to reapply, but you'll have to supply the documentation originally requested. And anyone that doesn't supply the information or someone that doesn't meet the eligibility once we get that documentation are no longer eligible for the program.
Okay, and this is a new section, and when I was talking to Mr. Valentine earlier, it was a little bit different how it's described to me. So we do not terminate that currently, is that correct? Or do we do terminate people now? And if so, how many people out of that 3% that we audit, or what percentage of that is we have problems with?
We go through this eligibility process now,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know the exact number. I can get that for you.
Thank you. Okay.
Anything else? Mm-mm. Anybody else? Next item is this amended or corrected.
Mike Seaman will handle that.
4313.1, load scheduling hours of employment. Seaman?
This is a new proposed policy that we don't have in place that deals with exempt employees in relation to federal regulations and education code.
Question? Huh? Yeah. All right. Is there a motion on this item, please? The first reading?
I'll move them.
Seconded.
The move by Jessica Shoemaker, seconded by Cammie Polis, to approve for first reading the following board policies and administrative regulations. Board policy 3550, 3551, 3553, and 4313.1 as amended or corrected. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Next item is an information report on our 2011 STAR results. Holy cow.
Okay, good evening. I'm pleased tonight to have some of the Ed Services staff with me to share with you some of our estimated accountability results. I want to make sure that everyone understands these are not official results. As our results come to us, we use independent vendor to help us interpret them and to get them in a readable form. I expect that the California Department of Education will begin to start releasing data in the next week, and truly over about the next 8 weeks, on a regular basis, data will be released. But I do want to share with you what we know so far. As you know, for accountability purposes, schools and districts are judged on adequate yearly progress, and that is made up of three components. The annual measurable objective, that's a target for proficiency in math and language arts. The academic performance index, in which schools need to meet a target or have 1 point of growth until they're at the 800 level and have met that. And then participation of at least 95% of students testing. For 2011, I've put the AMO or the targets on a chart for you. They're a little bit different at elementary, high school, and the district level. Roughly this year, schools and districts were expected to have about 67% of their students and subgroups proficient. Next year, it will go up about 10 percentage points. Mm-hmm. I'd like Noelle Decker, our coordinator of educational assessment, to share a little bit of our results.
Thank you, Ms. Valentine. As you can see, we have excellent data to present to you tonight, so that's exciting for us. The numbers I want to mention first off, as Ms. Valentine did, are estimates, so keep that in mind because they might be changing a little bit from here on out. All of the West Covina schools and the district overall have met their API goal. And I also want to point out, too, as you can see on your notes and on the screen, the increases that we've made have just been incredible gains. You can see that the district has made 19 points overall, and our significant subgroups have made greater gains than those 19 points. So it's really a tremendous growth that we've seen this last school year. Our annual measurable objectives, also great growth here as well. For the district, ELA and math, the percentages both went up, 4.8 in ELA and 4.1 in math. And you can also see in the other significant subgroup areas, Hispanic, socioeconomically disadvantaged, English learner, and the students with disabilities, you could see they've all gone up as well considerably. I want to mention, too, the white subgroup there, which we didn't put on the slide, is up as well. ELA is 4.1%, and math is up 2.6%. So, again, great gains, great numbers. I'd like to now pass it over to Ms. Taylor, who will present more specific information.
Good evening. You know, when we look at the data, it is, they said this is estimates, and so we get just a crush of numbers, and so we try to tear apart and find those things. So there are some hidden successes if you don't have sometimes access to all schools' information and just get that first glance that we wanted to share with you. With our Academic Performance Index, or the API, within second grade, you can see Linda and Monta Vista just really topping the chart of 969 and 966, respectively. In third grade, Monta Vista, Cameron, and California, you know, 870, 874, and 883. Just really strong growth and numbers, as well as fifth grade, San Jose, Merced, and Orangewood. And these are those hidden pockets of success that we have, and you can see this is throughout the district. It's not targeted at one school, but really throughout all of the schools. When you look at the annual measurable objectives, or AMOs, you can see some real significant highlights. For our English learners, this is percent proficient as measured on the CST. So for English learners, for English language arts, for West Cove, 68%. And Merlinda and Merced really close in. And then kudos to Merced, whose math English language learners is 83.6%. And this is with who has a significant subgroup at English language, I mean, English learners. And then our students with disabilities, who Ms. Decker did mention. Those hidden successes is 6 years of continuous upward movement and not a backward slide. We currently see 43%, almost 44% of the students proficient with a 26% growth, and math 46 with nearly 26% growth. So once again, even though these are estimates, we're really seeing some real significant movement forward. And one of the things that I know the board has asked us to keep you up to date on is the California and West Cove when we merged. And this is really one of those hidden successes, because when the schools move, then we move the student populations, the numbers, the state doesn't combine the numbers and kind of recalculate, so you hold true. So what we did, and I don't have a cohort, but we tried to do as best as possible to determine what their actual numbers would be with the student populations that they currently have. And so if you actually had recalculate their scores, you would see that the at California, I'm sorry, and you would have seen a 45.4 point gain, where you saw at West Coast, which I don't have, is the 111 point gain. ELA for California is a 7%, almost 8% proficient in math, 12%. So the California one sometimes gets hidden in that because you don't have that recalculation. And so we really saw tremendous gains of the students moving forward with this. Ms. Valentine.
Thank you. You know, as I've mentioned, this is sort of our first look at our data. We know that over the next few weeks, as the data is released to us from CDE, it will become more apparent exactly where we are. I actually expect that the estimated API will go down a little bit. That has been the pattern in the past, and it's because this is not inclusive of our student results for students who are attending SELPA or LACO programs. That comes in. That will be added in about a month. It is also not reflected of a process that we can send in additional information to help the state make accountability calculations. I think that a couple of things that certainly are on the horizon that we need to watch for is, by my calculation, and this is my estimate, we have 27 targets to meet as an LEA. I believe, by my calculation, that we did not meet two of those. And that's actually an improvement over last year. However, I think that one of those will put us into program improvement. We did, our subgroup of African American students did not meet the math target for this year. But I won't know that really until data comes in from the state and they verify that. I also know, based on announcements that were made yesterday, that a waiver process has been announced by Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, and over the next month, a process will be rolled out to states that states may request a waiver for provisions of NCLB. I don't know how that will affect any of these accountability measures. I just got some information about 6 o'clock this evening that indicated that probably by spring, the Federal Department of Education will be acting on state waivers, and so changes could come as early as next spring, probably more likely for the next school year. And as certainly all of that information becomes known to me, I'll keep the board updated, as well as updates on our data from the Department of Ed. If you have any specific questions, I'll try to answer. But I think that as more and more data comes out along the way, we can provide additional information reports to you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions, Ms. Paulus?
It looks like next year, if we don't have a waiver, we would have to have a 10% increase in our AMOs. And it doesn't look like we've ever had that. What would we do to try to increase that? Is there a plan in place? I know we've made great strides, as you can see here, but not the kind of stride that we're going to need next year.
That's right. There are two ways to meet an AMO. One is by meeting the target, the percent proficient that was established under NCLB. And then the other method is called the safe harbor method. And essentially what it is that you need to make growth of 10% in the number of students you move to proficiency. And for probably, I'm going to say about the last 3 years, we've had a number of schools, including the LEA, who have made individual targets by safe harbor. Last year, in fact, we made English learner, I think, math by safe harbor. This year, again, we made it by the safe harbor rule. Even though a district doesn't meet a specific numerical target as the AMO, as long as they're meeting the safe harbor requirement, they've met that accountability.
And I know when I first heard about safe harbor, there was some consequences to that, but it only lasted so long. You couldn't make safe harbor every year. Is that... and weren't there some consequences for choosing safe harbor?
Not that I'm aware of. As long as you're moving forward and making that roughly 10% growth each year, you remain in the safe harbor category.
But it looks like it's going to be more difficult to make.
Oh, yeah, I think, yeah.
So, but you're saying that we'll make safe harbor and we could just continue to make safe harbor every year? I thought there was something.
That under the current system, that would be possible. I'm not sure. I mean, I would have to do a little investigation to see if there was some sort of sanction that you couldn't make it over. But in certain categories, for example, students with disabilities, we've met the target by the safe harbor rule more than once.
Right.
But I'll investigate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Poulos. That was my question. The second thing is I wanted to know what we were going to proactively do, and I'm very impressed with the results of all the teachers. They did a great job, and the students this year, because 5 of our elementaries made the ELA target, and I mean 5 of our schools, of all the schools, and for math, 8 of them did. So that was my question, was what are we going to proactively do? Because it's going to get harder.
Right.
But thank you. You're going to address that. The second thing is you said we had 27 targets to meet, and we did not meet 2, and you said one of them was the African-American subgroup. What was the second?
The other one was African-American subgroup language arts.
Okay.
Math and language arts.
Math. Thank you.
But it will be the math
that gets us.
Identifies us. That, you know, but that, and that's by my calculation. But I think that's what it will be.
Okay, thank you.
When do you think we'll have the data that we can discuss school by school? When is the plan to have the discussion school by school on what was met, what wasn't met, and what the plans are as we go forward?
We've been able to roll this information out to principals earlier than we ever have.
Right.
We got it a little bit earlier this year.
Right.
And we're working with principals on Thursday with that. And I think they need a little bit of time to digest it with their own staffs. But I would imagine by mid-September, individual schools or staffs would be able to certainly understand their own data and probably have into place then the actions that they want to implement for the school year.
Okay. And then I had a question, I guess, about our vendor in dealing with the California West Cove. They weren't able to recreate from the students going there what the cohort was. I mean, so that
they said these are our estimates, and once we have all of our data put into our school city data manipulator,
mm-hmm.
We'll be able to get closer to a cohort of students
okay.
who are moving forward. This is just going to take us a little bit more time. Also, I should inform the board that we have submitted to the state information regarding the demographic change of those schools. Now, the state will analyze that, and they will determine if there was a significant demographic change that would cause any of the accountability measures to be impacted.
Mm-hmm.
And we should know that, I would guess, by October.
When do you think we'll be able to get the school similar school ranking with the state
school,
stuff?
Similar school ranking doesn't come out until about the end of April or May. It's the last data report. It wasn't until, I believe, right at the end of April that we got our final.
Right, for this last time.
Yeah, for the last time.
And that's always enlightening because you see 10 to 10 sometimes, and then you see schools that may have a high API, but when you compare them to some other schools, aren't as high as
right.
you normally would think
right.
you know, they would be. And so is there a way to kind of short-circuit that with at least the San Gabriel Valley or schools in this kind of area? Or is that not possible?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least some kind of comparison with school districts around?
I don't know. I'll ask about that. I think the similar schools ranking is probably would be the most difficult. The state ranking is just a pure ranking of all of the numbers in the state. Similar schools takes into about 16 other
categories,
factors. Yeah. And so I'm not sure how.
But is there a way to just, I mean, I don't know what every district does as far as, you know, they don't use our services necessarily, but, you know, is there a way to try to track that down for comparison?
Of similar
schools. Similar schools or just schools in the San Gabriel Valley?
Well, you know what, I've done that in the past.
Yeah, right.
We just get a range of what other schools and other districts.
Right, yeah.
And we usually have to get that. Just through making personal phone calls because it takes so long to get it from the state.
Right.
So as soon as other districts do their own calculations, start calling our friends.
Okay. Perfect. That's okay. And the other thing is, you know, one of the things I'm interested in is I want to see if whether or not the gender gap has decreased since the last time we looked at the numbers between the underperformance of boys vis-a-vis girls. Especially, you know, after third grade, especially in language arts, it's really that gap keeps growing larger and larger. And, you know, see what that difference is based on gender at the schools. Because that's where you really start seeing is third grade. The gap gets bigger and bigger. And, of course, that impacts high school graduation rates, college attendance, and all that. That gap's been getting bigger. Nationwide, and I want to see. I know we've had some schools, like I remember Monte Vista, you know, when they did the review of the media center, that they, you know, found out they didn't have as many books that would appeal, you know, that they didn't, you know, there's very few sport books and things like that, things that they thought, you know, boys would like to read. And so, you know, I just want to get those numbers when we can. Because I know the state doesn't make us break it out like that.
No, but I think we can.
Yeah.
We can.
That's what I'm hoping. So, thank you.
Hey.
Thank you.
Mrs. Polis,
I think that's it.
The last question I had was about Edgewood High School, and I know it was just ninth graders.
Oh, okay.
If we decide, I know you haven't really had a chance to disaggregate the data, but do you think that the high schoolers would, at West Covina High School, would be about the same?
You know, that's probably one of the real difficult ones to estimate because at the high school level, the 10th grade census Casey and CSTs carry the weight of a high school API. So this really isn't, this is the 9th grade CST, so it gives us a little bit of an idea, and shortly we hope to have the proficiency data. Next year, having the 10th grade there, I think it will be far more telling about the results, only because at 9-12, the 10th grade assessments really carry the weight of accountability.
And I just have to say, wow, Denise Patton, that's an awesome score. And for those of you who don't have it in front of you, it was 924. It's like,
and that wasn't the broken out score, right? That wasn't the broken out. That was K-8,
well,
right?
That was a K-8. So yeah. When we have to be really clear, only one of our eighth grades have broken 800. I mean, it's 830, but I mean, that's awesome. It's a big, when I saw that, it's like, whoa.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. It's good information. Next item on the agenda is item number 14, contract for professional services. Ms. Shoemaker asked to have that reconsidered or discussed.
Yeah, and I'm not sure really how much I can say about it out here other than we did not get a copy of the contract. I can understand not attaching it to the agenda because of the specific area it addresses, but I've noticed that it's becoming a pattern for us not to receive contracts that we're voting on, such as the one last time for a new attorney. And so I just wanted to make sure that when we are voting on a contract, we receive a copy, and so does the public, if appropriate.
Okay.
The other thing is in our transmittal, the scope of the investigation far exceeded any discussion that was had on the matter, and it was a closed session discussion, so I can't specifically say why. And so I'm not voting for it. One, I didn't vote for the investigation to begin with. Two, it's far exceeding the scope of what was voted on, so I don't think it's appropriate for the board in general to be voting on it. And then with this, we also had a transmittal that named an attorney that I'm not familiar with as handling this matter with her. And I would just like to know when the board approved a change of counsel in terms of handling the specific matter that she's addressing, because I don't think it's wise at this point when we have our general counsel with institutional knowledge being replaced by somebody who was voted on at the last board meeting by the board to, for what I understand, handle quick questions, not pending litigation. And so I'd like to know why that change was made and where exactly our counsel is on this matter.
Okay. I think you asked several questions there, so let me go back. In the case of Michelle Lane, as you know, it was a request from Lozano Smith that we have independent counsel and do the investigation. And it was my fault in that it wasn't the contract wasn't approved prior to well, it was I signed it, but it wasn't not brought to the board prior to her coming, and so we put her on here because. Obviously, she needs to be paid, and so that was my fault in that I did not put her in a timely manner so that you would have seen it and get it approved before her coming. As far as I assume you're referring to Mr. Parham, he is working with Michelle Lane on the EEOC complaint on both two EEOC complaints that we have, an employee and also. The most recent for the superintendent, for the past superintendent, and I talked with Greg Wedner at Lozano Smith, and I asked him if he would that I wanted to make a change and have Mr. Parham play lead in this case and try to see if we can move it forward, and so the three of them that. Well, all of them are collaborating together, and Mr. Parham is playing lead on it.
Can I continue?
No, go ahead.
Okay. For me, the issue wasn't voting on Michelle Lane's contract. Yes, it's late. The issue was, in our transmittal, the scope of her investigation is not what the board approved.
I have no idea what she investigated or what she asked. I wasn't there, so I really don't know.
That may have to be a closed session discussion because at this point, what she's investigating is not what the board authorized. In fact, what she's investigating happened 6 weeks after the vote for the investigation she's supposed to be doing.
Okay. I have no idea what she investigated or did investigate.
And then we're back to...
I wasn't in there.
So. Again, the change from Lozano Smith, who has been handling this and who has been our counsel for the last couple of years. I feel that the board should have approved a change of counsel if there was going to be one, because our counsel now has the institutional knowledge. They're our attorney of record. I'm sure, based on the letters I've seen, it's the counsel that people are sending the letters and correspondence to. I would like an update from Lozano Smith as to what's going on with this claim, what's going on with this matter. I do know that they requested to be here tonight and were told that they could not come. That's concerning to me.
I didn't know that.
He thought that we should put this item on the agenda in closed session, and there had been no movement whatsoever, so there was no need to put it on the agenda and incur additional costs, that's all.
The other item is, it may be better for Board of Education discussion because it's a little off topic from it.
Right. Anybody else? Any other questions, comments?
Wait, I don't disagree that maybe there needs to be a discussion in closed session, because I know I wasn't asked any questions about 6 weeks after, so I don't know what we're talking about. You know, sometimes people, so I do think.
I just don't know what I can say publicly.
You know, so I do think, I don't think that's, I don't have a problem doing that. Because obviously right now everything is all kind of vague, and so I don't know.
Yeah.
When people say it's 6 weeks after, what are you talking about? You know, I have no idea. And so, because, there was no reference, when I went through everything, there was no reference to anything 6 weeks after, whatever. So, so I think at some point that needs to be discussed in closed session. That's something. Mr. Garcia did explain to me just now, because my concern was why we didn't see this earlier, the retroactivity of it. It was kind of a problem, but he blamed himself, and I don't know what we do to him about it. But. Because you're leaving.
I thought it had been approved. Lozano Smith sent us a contract, asked us to sign it.
We approved authorizing it, but we didn't approve the contract.
Yeah. It'll take 2 seconds to answer it, but again, I can't explain in open session a personnel item.
So are you asking to step into closed session?
Well, we can't talk about it in closed session.
Because
it's not agendized.
It's
not
agendized. We'll discuss it the next closed session.
We can meet at 7 a.m. or 6 o'clock on Friday.
On Friday.
Eight o'clock. Are we going to table it until Friday then? If we
do we have enough time to add an item to the agenda for closed session for Friday? I'm sure we do.
We could meet at 7:30.
You can just add a closed session item for Friday.
Separate morning. Special meeting.
Separate meeting, right? Same start.
5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take long, I wouldn't think, so.
Same time, yeah. Okay. All right. Do we table this or do we vote on it?
At least I know what we're talking about.
If I could say it, I would.
I mean, we have a bill that needs to be paid, so it's up to you.
All right.
But it would be just till Friday. That would be fine, right?
I think you can wait as far as approving the contract. I mean, I assume that you're going to approve the contract, or otherwise.
I just don't know what the issues are about the scope. So
Again, if I could answer it in public, I would.
No, I know. So if we could table it,
Do you want her to be here?
No.
The issue is not with her. It's the scope of the investigation that she's being directed to conduct.
Yeah, but that may be an issue that's different than paying her for stuff that she was authorized to do.
But we're approving a contract, and the contract's not in front of us, so I can't answer the question of whether or not she's been given a scope outside of
whatever direction.
She can wait. She can wait. We'll table
okay.
it. All right. Next item on the agenda is Board of Education discussion. Did you want to address something else in that?
Well, my last question that needs to be addressed is we have a general counsel that we have a contract with who's been handling this case, and I don't want the district to face a situation where we're not complying with letters and responding to letters that leads us into a situation where a writ is filed against us because one council is not doing anything because they've been directed not to, and the new council, who we haven't directed to act on our behalf in this matter, is doing something that he shouldn't be. So, I mean, if the board wants to authorize the change of counsel for this particular matter, then that would be up to them. But I think that's a decision for the board and not necessarily staff.
Well, is there a way to roll that into the closed session discussion on Friday?
I think we're going to have to. I don't think we have any choice.
I mean, I think that'd be part of it when we're talking about the scope, wouldn't it?
Right.
Most likely. So it's all one item.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's my question.
Yeah, it could be.
But I was just trying to clarify the model.
Right. So we're back to 5:30.
Might be clear.
Back to 5:30. Yeah. Back to 5:30.
Yeah.
Pardon me? Yeah, just go on.
And with the council.
Right.
The change of counsel.
So it'll be a closed session to discuss anticipated litigation.
Right.
With an open session to vote on that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, on that one item. Yeah, yeah.
Wait 5 minutes.
Sure.
It's not going to take them an hour to tell us what.
Uh-oh. 5 minutes.
Maybe. We'll see.
All right. Anything else? Any other board discussion? Dates to remember. We have a special meeting of the Board of Education on August 12th. August 18th is welcome back at
Edgewood
at 7:15 in the morning. August 22nd is the first day of school. Labor Day, September 15th, holidays, and our next Board of Education meeting is September 13th, and with that, we are adjourned at 7:55.